Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a sort of...
Hey everybody, this is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman, back with a 103rd, count them 103, a Green Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition Zoom call. We have with us 74 people, just been joined by the great Ray McClendon in Georgia and so many other fabulous people. We got a really jam-packed agenda as always. Today we're gonna be going for 2 hours. We start with Tatanka Bricka and Ron Leonard are gonna talk to us about the solar issues in California and nationwide. We're gonna also deal with Diablo Canyon. There was a very important press conference this week about the insane attempt to keep Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant open, which is beyond belief as far as I'm concerned. We're then gonna switch over to the abortion issue. We wanna talk about potential states where there might be referenda. I know there's gonna be a vote coming up in Kansas. We also have a vote coming up in Michigan. There are a number of other states where abortion will be on the ballot. We're gonna discuss, there's been quite a bit of press lately on a shift in the evangelical movement. The evangelical movement, which has been the rock of the right-wing fascist movement in this country, the so-called Christian nationalist movement, is starting to show signs of cracking and actually becoming less right-wing, which is a kind of an earth-shattering situation. We're gonna talk also, we're gonna be with Ray McClendon from Georgia, Robert Wilson, hopefully from North Carolina. We're gonna talk about the Moore Amendment and also the state of we'll start with Ray, talk about the state of grassroots organizing in Georgia, which is absolutely essential. Then we're gonna go to a number of folks from Progressive Democrats of America and to Hal Ginsberg for some short presentations on grassroots organizing in various places around the country. And then in the second hour, we're gonna get into January 6th again. Amazing developments, the conviction of Steve Bannon and a whole lot of other stuff. January 6th, of course, is just an endless, endless topic. We're joined by Alyssa Matras in San Francisco. Hi, Alyssa. So let's do, I also wanna mention to everybody, I'm sure you'll all be thrilled to know that I now have a new knee. I had surgery last Thursday, so I'm sponsoring a contest. If you wanna put in the chat what you think my new left knee should be named, I will gladly acknowledge and embrace all possible suggestions. I wanna know, is Ira Helfand on the call? Ira Helfand, have you joined us? If you have, please raise your hand and please pipe up. I see we're joined by Dennis Bernstein, the legendary host of the Flashpoint show, which originates in KPFA and is broadcast all over the Pacifica network. Welcome, Dennis, welcome Anna Georgie as well. So let's start off now. Ira Helfand, if you are on the call, please raise your hand. We will call on you. We know you have a major Zoom call immediately after ours on issues having to do with peace and organizing. So let's start with Tatanka. Tatanka, we know you have a time constraint. You and Ron Leonard, you're dealing with green energy now in California, and we're also dealing with the insanity of the possibility of Diablo Canyon, the nuclear plants being continued to operate. We have posted a very important press conference in the link, and I do have also in the links an article posted on what has happened in Florida, where the governor has vetoed an anti-solar bill, and yet it continues to move along in California. So Tonka Bricker, do you want to fill us in, please, on what's happening?
Sure. Question, Harvey. How much time do we have for this segment?
Why don't you give us 5 minutes, if you would, and go ahead with that.
Okay. Just very quickly on the solar bill with Romero. First bill going through. The RICO, Danny Sheehan is putting the finishing touches on the RICO Act as we speak. It has to get to Rob Bonta, the Attorney General, in August. We're going to be running on this from Labor Day on. This is to get the state of California to hold hearings and grand jury investigations. The act uses the Racketeering Act to hold the oil companies responsible for what they've known and what they've wreaked on the whole planet for the last 45, 50 years. Pierces the corporate veil, holds board members, financiers, et cetera, accountable. Very important development. We'll be following that.
And Tonka, do you have a link where people can look at basic information?
Not yet on that, but RomeroInstitute.org and GreenCal.org are the two sites. I'm going to go right into Diablo Canyon. There's a lot to say about what's going on with solar, but it's all interrelated. All the attack on rooftop solar is definitely interrelated with this nuclear strategy. The conversation in the beginning, you know, we're seeing what corporate capture looks like of the CPUC and also with a politician in high office. So it's going to take a lot of pressure to have everybody do the right thing. But the key thing that's happening in Diablo, you know, there was a letter that went from nuisance person to the Energy Commission, to the energy cabinet person of Biden, and basically asking for something that then they came back with and basically eliminated a whole bunch of legal stuff that they'd already agreed to, including knocking out the mandatory things that the cost of nuclear be compared to the alternatives, to solar, that is. And we already know it's more expensive than solar, it's more expensive than wind, it's the most expensive thing now. It's a death economy, and the whole industry from the oil companies down to the utilities is basically addicted to it, and they're holding on. And that's what's, you know, in the big picture of what's happening. They've got to overcome so many things to get this thing passed. They've got to get it passed through the Lands Commission, the California Coastal Commission, the State Water Resources Board. I don't know how they're going to buy them off. The moratorium on plants, you know, there's no cost. They've admitted that they really don't know the cost of retooling this thing because there's so much they have to do in terms of safety. And the workers, there's 1,300 workers there, many of them up in the $200,000 range, and they have no idea. They basically are admitting that the costs are out of control. And this is touted as something that's absolutely necessary. They're using the scare tactic that 3,500 megawatts will not be available during the peak season, during the summer and the fire season, and that will mean 3,500,000 Californians will have to go without energy in the afternoon and evening. Now, all of this is predicated on the fact of them slowing down, unbelievable, the state encouraging the market forces in which rooftop solar and other forms of alternative energy are doing quite well, thank you. If they put all their energy in that direction, I have no doubt that this could be overcome and be much safer and much cheaper for the people of California and for the world. Of course, they don't even talk about the elephant in the room, which is, you know, the possibility of a meltdown. That isn't even on the table.
All right, so let's back this up. That was great, Tonka. I have to tell you, I know this is going to sound like hyperbole, but I just listened to this press conference. And what Tonka has referred to a major rollback of established law. We're not talking, this is not some kind of hippie gathering here, although, you know, what the heck, we hippies got it right. But the bottom line is, I'm going to compare the attempt to keep Diablo Canyon online in legal terms to January 6th to an attempted coup d'etat. Because, and I'm not the first to mention this. This was mentioned in the press conference. What's happening in California, and the reason I wanted to put this first, is we are seeing an attempted coup d'etat by the nuclear power industry against established environmental law. It is as if these guys were storming the Capitol and tearing up the Constitution, because there are at least a half a dozen, if not more, very clear pieces of established legislation on the books in California that have to be completely torn up to continue operations at Diablo Canyon. Is that accurate?
And Sluggo, I think you had it right a few times ago when you said this was the model of what decommissioning could look like in the country of a nuclear power plant. And that's what they're afraid of.
Right. So here's what happened, folks. And in 2018, after at least 2 years of very serious negotiations, hour after hour after hour, between the state, and Jerry Brown was governor at the time, right? Yes. And the Public Utilities Commission and the utility company and the local governments and the unions and the public. Hearing after hearing after hearing, people going days and days and days, drafting up a very pristine, very sane way to shut down these two nuclear power plants in an orderly fashion. Now, I was not happy about this deal because it allowed that Diablo Canyon to operate to 2015. I would have liked it shut yesterday, but that's what they came up with. And this deal was written into law. And it is in the Constitution in the state of California. This was passed. The deal was empowered by the state legislature. And it involved suspension of a very large number of very serious economic and ecological restrictions and things having to do with workers' rights and ratepayers' rights and whatever other basic human rights you can think of, including the right of the people of Los Angeles, of which I'm one, to not face the threat of a radioactive cloud pouring down over me and my children and my grandchildren. And this is all established law. And what we've seen now in the last couple of months is an attempted coup d'etat.
And it's been in process for a while. The whole slowdown of the solar rooftop thing is aimed to say that solar and the alternatives can't provide what we really need in this emergency. So they're going to sort of an emergency powers approach and using a scare tactic of turning off people's electricity.
Right, and simultaneously, the Public Utilities Commission has been presented with a bill that will make it harder to install rooftop solar. So it's incomprehensible. And as Wendy pointed out a couple of shows ago, the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, who is a hardcore Trump fascist, vetoed a very similar bill in Florida, which would have killed rooftop solar in Florida, at least seriously harmed it. The same kind of bill is proceeding in California without opposition from the governor. So we have, on the one hand, they're saying we're going to be short of power, therefore we have to operate these nuclear plants and suspend the Constitution. And on the other hand, we're going to make it harder simultaneously to install rooftop solar. Now, if that's not the definition of insanity, I don't know what is.
So basically, you know, everyone knows now that Diablo Canyon is slated to close. One of the major reasons, in addition to safety, which has always been there, is that its power prices in several years now have exceeded those of solar or even natural gas. So it is economically dead unless it can get the boost from the, you know, the federal government and the state government and us right. paying for a bill that they have no idea what it's going to be. The change came in the guidelines where they opened this up, came after Ana Matasantos, who's cabinet secretary for Newsom, sent a letter in late May to Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm asking for the DOE to drop the requirement that a plant must participate in a, quote, competitive electricity market to access funds.
It's
so they're basically saying, forget the, you know, forget the market. We're going to pay through the nose for something that is more dangerous, more expensive. They don't even have an idea what the budget is.
Yeah, okay. So listen, folks, I've led off with this because Diablo Canyon, as far as I'm concerned, is the number one threat to the future of the human race. It's surrounded by, and I say that advisedly, it's surrounded by a dozen earthquake faults, 45 miles from the San Andreas. You've heard a lot of this, but it's staggering. I do have a piece on Reader Supported News about this. And we are dealing with this as best we possibly can.
And everybody who's been asking you to make calls to support rooftop solar, do it. And everybody that is working to provide an alternative, I don't know whether we're going to need to run another governor. I mean, I've been counting on, with all its flaws, Governor Newsom, you know, carrying the banner, but I don't know.
We have 100 people on the call with us. We're going to take some questions. And then I want to go to Georgia after this, because I know Ray McClendon is with us and his time is often limited. So let's go Justin, Ron Leonard, and Joel Siegel.
Okay. So the long,
go ahead, Justin.
The long story short is that the CPUC has long been bought and paid for.
Yeah.
And my relative has confirmed that not only have former governors and the current governor gone judge shopping along various lines, you may all remember the San Bruno pipeline incident and how the emails came out basically saying that regulators were just having gluttonous parties with the executives from the utilities. Well, it gets even deeper because campaign contributions, $22 million just to Newsom, just from the unions underneath the utilities, underneath the oil companies. And so it is a thoroughly corrupt system. Now, Tatanka mentioned the RICO lawsuit. So where the leverage point is in all of this comes down to the fact that California's tax revenue is now being threatened. The agriculture that made California the fifth largest economy in the world is not getting its power for food processing. And so this is starting to mess with even, you know, people's electability. So once it does, I think that you can start actually putting the screws on people like the attorney general and people in lower offices to say, your district is gonna have some problems because of this. Now, the other layer of all this does come down to the planning of things. And Washington State went through this about 40 years ago. They got themselves, weaned themselves off of nuclear through coalitions such as ecotourism. The natural raw salmon runs had fans from all sorts of states. And so even congressmen from other states stepped in to lend their hand to reforming the policies. And now they have a distributed grid.
Okay.
Now, the last thing in all of this is just our own part in it, which is, hey, you know, use fewer rooms so okay. that you don't need as much air conditioning.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that, Justin. Much appreciated. And we know the CPUC is very corrupt. Stay with us, please. You're always cogent and on target. Ron Leonard, our great solar expert, then Joel, and then Wendy. Ron Leonard. And after this discussion, we could go to Ray McClendon in Georgia. Go ahead.
But clearly, Harvey is a little bit upset about this minor issue about people possibly dying. But facts matter. And facts are that on July 15th, California's batteries that are charged by solar produced more power into the grid than Diablo Canyon's nuclear power plant. Wow. Now, what does that mean? That means that this whole specious argument that they're trying to foist on the public, that what happens when the sun don't shine or the wind don't blow don't really make any sense whatsoever in terms of facts. And factually, California really has been a leader in terms of the amount of energy on the grid from renewable sources on a daily basis. And in fact, has saved California's ass multiple times. Just like last week, Texas grid would have gone down multiple times without the amount of solar and wind on that grid. So really, we have to tell them to get a grip.
It's about
time. This is reality.
And I want to point out that Texas is the place in U.S. history when they sold nuclear power to the country. They said that electricity would be too cheap to meter. It never happened with nuclear, but it does happen in Texas all the time with wind power, where they give it away at night.
And the fun point in Texas is that the nuclear power plants that do exist down there have to be shut off when it gets too hot out because they can't run.
Right, because they can't cool down. Exactly.
And one more, before we go to the next one, one more reminder of Texas. When the right wing wants to target California politically, they also target it economically. Those of us that live here understand how they got rid of our Democratic governor and put in Schwarzenegger. It was around the whole thing, which was later exposed as the Enron scandal, where all our utility prices went up and they blamed it on the governor.
So. Yep, there you go. Joel Siegel and then Wendy and Myla.
Joel? Hey, Sluggo, I hope your knee is, I hope you're feeling okay.
Well, you got to name that knee. So go ahead.
All right. Well, let's see. So I want to pose a question. So this is not at all a criticism, it's an observation. So thousands of scientists have said we have less than 9 years to transition to 100% clean renewable energy, solar, wind. Every leading progressive climatologist that I know or scientist says, don't build any new nuclear plants. They're too expensive. They're dangerous. Just don't recommission them, you know, once they've gone offline. The Sierra Club annual budget is $100 million. The majority of Americans have said, this was MSNBC, that 1% of the American public feels that climate change is a problem. So there's an issue here. You got 9 years for humanity to survive. You have one green group with a $100 million budget, and 1% of the country doesn't think that climate change is a serious problem, which leads me to 2 points and I'll stop. There has to be a much better educational program about the threat of climate change and the benefits of going solar and wind, or I'm really, really concerned about my grandchildren, about the fate of this planet. I think Europe has got to be a wake-up call for everybody with what's going on there. And then in New York City over the weekend, they had a flash flood. It just rained, like the precipitation was outlandish. It flooded the subways. It wasn't a hurricane. The question is, when are we going to take matters in our own hands? And that includes this group and provide leadership, because there's not one bill in Congress that'll do what Tatanka is doing in California. That doesn't make any sense to me. There's not a drawdown bill in Congress. We got to do that. We have to use new tactics and get new leaders. Thanks.
Thank you, Joel, as always. The great news is that all we got to do to fight the climate, most importantly, is to push renewables and shut King Kong, coal, oil, nukes, and gas. I mean, and that happens to be best for the environment and for the job situation. If we can push renewables, if we can push solar panels on every rooftop in the country, we can solve the climate crisis.
And that's Sluggo, before you put Wendy on, I've got to put my hat in the ring. It won't win, but I got your new name.
Okay, go ahead.
Southpaw Sluggo, in honor of your good left knee that's going to kick ass.
All right, I'll put that in. Absolutely, thank you much.
Okay. It'll go over with the soccer people.
There you go, Wendy Lederman. Wendy, and then Myla, and then Jeanette.
Hey, thank you so much, and I hope you're feeling better, Harvey. I'll call it Nuggo, that's what I think.
Right. So,
I think a huge, huge factor here that I think just kind of spreads across the country and is at the heart of everything is just the monopolies of it, really. And same thing here with the veto that DeSantis did, which I kind of predicted because it would make the progressives look bad, is that in the other hand, he's still enabling these monopolies. Like, we have this public service commission here, which is five people that's appointed by the governor. And it basically, in the end, it ends up keeping frack gas dominant, essentially, because there's no, you have all your different regions that are controlled by their cartels. Even with net metering, like, you still need to attach to the grid, and it has no cash value for what you're getting in return. So you still have, you still can't have any competition in the market. And the PCS is in charge of creating competition in the market, which it just absolutely does not do. And right now we have between 2022 and 2023, we have expected $1 billion cost rises in energy cost for the consumer. And that's caused by climate change, population growth, and aging infrastructure. And the PCS is like allowing the energy companies to pass that on to their customers. So basically, it's just the monopolies that we have to look at. And regardless of what one person is doing, we need to get the antitrust laws back in
Absolutely.
Order. Thank you so much.
And this is a situation where the market is on our side, and technology and economy and jobs, they're all on our side. We got to switch to renewable energy. That's the answer. Myla Reason, Danette, and then Hal. Myla Reason?
Hey, I was just waiting to be allowed to unmute. And I feel a little bit guilty about eating into Ray McClendon's time. I know we really want to hear Ray, and I know your time's short, but I just wanted to remind, especially the Californians among us, that the California legislature is controlled by Democrats, both the Senate and the Assembly, as well as the governor, right? And yet this legislature has allowed PG&E to operate out of compliance with the federal Clean Water Act. For many years, they've given them a pass, a waiver on their once through cooling system, which is illegal. And all the legislators that I have talked to over the years about this are basically passing the buck. They have a lot of power. They have oversight over the state water board, the legislature does. And yet they just keep pretending that they don't have the power that they do have. And when Gavin Newsom, as lieutenant governor of the state of California, had the power and authority to enforce the California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA, which would have required an environmental impact statement of Diablo before they could, before the state of California would renew the lease on the coastal land that Diablo sits on. Lieutenant Governor Newsom passed the buck, and he's in the pocket of Diablo. He's been, and PG&E, he's been indicating this for many years now. We should not be surprised by what he's doing. And we have to demand of our legislators that they get off, you know, that they start using the exercising the responsibility that they have to keep us safe and to comply with the law. Thank you.
Thank you, Myla. Thank you very much. Beautiful statement. Danette, and then Hal.
And yeah, thanks, Logo.
Yeah.
Hope the knee's doing better. I like Wendy's suggestion for a name.
Okay.
just a couple things. Please, on the next CPUC meeting, try to be on and make a comment about the rooftop solar tax. I'd like to make a request of everyone to call Biden. The White House phone line is open Tuesday through Thursday. They have shortened hours, but please tell him he needs to declare a climate emergency now. We can't wait any longer. His speech the other day was way too soft pedaling of the situation. We can't afford to lose any more time. Also, if you want to get involved with PDA's liaison project, we do letter drops every month to our congressional reps, and it's very helpful in getting some of this legislation passed. We still don't have enough sponsors for all of the climate bills, including cutting off the fossil fuel subsidies. They get billions and billions of dollars a year from taxpayers to continue to pollute the planet. So let me know. I will put my email in the chat. Thanks.
Thank you, Danette. Very good. Much appreciated. Hal Ginsberg, and then we're going to go to Georgia and Ray McClendon.
All right. Thank you so much, Sluggo. I know I'm here to talk about the 14.3 and the insurrectionists, but this is a subject that's very, very dear to my heart that I've been writing about for many years. And we need much, much higher taxes on all fossil fuels. That's the only way to harness the marketplace and incentivize the consumption of clean, green energy like solar and wind. But more than that, I just want to quote one of the former president of Oxfam International, Winnie Benyamina, who said that climate change, and I call it the climate crisis or the climate catastrophe, and inequality are inextricably linked. We are not going to be able to rein in the greenhouse gas emissions with the massive inequality on the planet today. The poor, the struggling, the workers view the environmental movement as trying to take money out of their mouths. And wealthy people know how much money they can make by burning up our mother. But if we reduce that inequality greatly, then the rich and the influential don't get much more because they're taxed, it'll be taxed away from them. And poor, struggling, working people won't be hungry. They won't be fighting for a place to sleep at night. So they'll be able to consider other factors that matter, like our planet's future. We must tackle inequality. That is the only way we're going to get people to take this issue with the seriousness it deserves.
Thank you for that, Hal. Much appreciated. Beautiful.
Can statement. I make a final statement?
Of course, Tatanka. Go ahead.
Okay, so building off Hal, the Green California campaign, which is starting with SB 1230, the electrification, aims at the EJ community, the environmental justice community, has brought together labor and environment, environmental justice, and interfaith. The environmental justice community are the ones facing the greatest difficulty. So the charging stations are aimed to get to the poor people. They're aimed to get into apartment houses and all the places that the state never considers. The whole way we build the climate movement is not ignore injustice, but to build it in. In the future, I want to come back and talk more about CARB, California Air Resources Board, largest bureaucracy of its kind in the nation, and it controls the timeline of everything. When we bump up against, you know, putting our 2030 timeline, we have to go through that agency. So I want to reveal more about that. Okay. Also, the bills in 2324, the public banking and regenerative agriculture bill. Also, those who are interested in learning more about what Romero and the Dolores Huerta Foundation are doing, it's romeroinstitute.org and greencal.org. Lastly, if you want to be invited to the Wednesday night circle of 100 call, Dolores Huerta did an amazing over an hour talking about her life 2 weeks ago. She got right up to the point where she's organizing. And so she said, I'll come back for part two, and I'm waiting to hear a call back. She may be on this Wednesday. So leave your name, your phone number, and your email in the chat, and just say circle 100, you know, want an invite. And please get me the chat, because I have to go, Harvey. I'm sorry, I can't
capture
these names unless Steve or somebody sends them to me.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone.
We have 108 people on the call, and we have Ray McClendon with us from Atlanta. We're going to switch gears now. We're going to go to the election situation in Atlanta. Ray, last week you broke one of our cardinal rules, which we allowed, and I'm not going to allow again. I'm sorry. You were driving. People have been in their cars, but they've been sitting in their cars. So, with 108 people on the call, we want to hear from you. Ray, give us an update on Georgia. And in terms of one of the things that you mentioned last week, which really jumped out at me, you said that you're in more counties this year than you were in 21. So can you tell us what's going on and what you need in Georgia to proceed with the grassroots organizing, that's going on?
Okay, thanks, Audrey. And glad to know that your knee is going well, and make sure you do your rehab. So I want to answer your question. First of all, we've done our research and analysis, And we have made a determination that we need to create, to increase the number of counties that we impact in 2022. So this is the Georgia Way 2022 edition, which will include 58 counties, represent 90 plus percent of the vote of Blacks and other people of color. That strategy we decided to deploy because we want to not only try to come across with wins for Warnock as well as for Stacey Abrams for governor, but we want to make sure we protect in one of the key congressional districts that has been impacted by gerrymandering and redistricting, and also aggressively go after another district. As you all know, demographically, the state of Georgia is purple now, but it is not blue. And so we've got to be aggressive this cycle. It potentially will be blue in another 4 years, or 2 to 4 years. But we want to accelerate that process. So we're going into 58 counties with 90 plus percent of voters of color. We're also expanding on the membership of the Georgia Way. As many of you know, we have incorporated a number of grassroots and civic engagement organizations to do the relational organizing that is the hallmark of the Georgia Way. All of those groups are back at the table, but we are pleased to have added several key additional constituencies. Number one, there's a new organization that's been created in the state of Georgia called Faith Works, which is an organization that represents over 1,000 congregations, temples, et cetera, and mosques around the state in virtually every county. That has agreed to come on board with our overall collaboration. We also have are bringing in a series of the Black state elected officials organizations, the Black county elected officials organizations around the state as well. So the brand is growing from the Georgia Way. People know that we produce results, and they are coming on board to participate with us. So we are in the process now of working with our good friend, Andrea Miller, as well as some of the other organizations to put together a 90-day plan that we'll implement. We're now 106 days out from the general election, but we're only 84 days out from the start of early voting in Georgia, which is October 17th. So we've got a lot of work to do to wrap up our plans over the next week or two, and then launch our full-fledged GOTV plan beginning by the middle of August toward early voting. So we'll be doing, as we've always done, voter registration, voter education to inform voters on how to not only navigate the voter suppression law, SB 202, but to get a better feel for the candidates and how important these offices are and how important these elections are. And then recognizing that we want to have votes in the bank, so to speak. And so we're gonna be pushing aggressively across the state, early voting starting on October 17th. We obviously need to raise funds to deploy our resources across the state. We're working with a number of different funding operations to attempt to do this. But as always, we appreciate the support of all of the folks on this call and anyone else that you can put us in touch with. We have a budget over a little over $1.7 million that we need to raise in order to be effective across all fronts going into the fall. So that's a quick overview of where we are.
Where do people, Ray, we're putting in the chat, where do people send money? Put in the chat, where do people send
money? Mike should have it. You can send money to the Atlanta NAACP. And also I've given you, if you don't have it, Mike, I can put in the chat the ActBlue for the Georgia NAACP.
All right, it's fantastic what you're doing. You know, we have a Senate race, a critical Senate race. It will come up, there's been whiffs of charges against Senator Warnock, allegedly using campaign money for personal legal expenses. Can you speak to that?
Sure, it's a tempest in a teapot. The what occurred, there was a lawsuit that was filed in the early 2000s that was dismissed. And that lawsuit was refiled, or a new version of that was filed in 2021. what has occurred is that there is a gray area as to whether or not, since he was a senator when the lawsuit was refiled, whether or not that complies with the FEC provisions for using campaign contributions. Mark Elias, who many of you know is his attorney, Mark Elias knows election law and FEC as well as anyone. And Elias doesn't see any problem whatsoever with what's being done because it was filed during the time he was a US senator. What Republicans are trying to do is to create a controversy here by saying that it's a violation of the FEC rules because it's for something that occurred prior to his becoming an elected official. So, from my perspective, that's a stretch, but they're trying to milk it for what it's worth. It's really having minimal impact. It's not a major item of debate or discussion locally. We know that Herschel Walker has, for this one issue on Warnock's side, he's got dozens of issues in terms of malfeasance, improprieties, and so forth. So I don't think in the long run it will have much of an impact at all on the race. This race is not going to be based on anything that's legal. That's going to be who gets their people out to the polls.
Exactly right. That, remember that. It's a question of who gets the people out of the polls. And we saw in 2021 what can happen when you do that. We have a question from Dennis Bernstein. Dennis, the host of Flashpoints, based at KPFA, frequent visitor and supporter. Dennis, did you want to ask a question?
Okay. Thank you, Ray. Really appreciate the great work you do. I wanted to just throw this out. I'm sure you saw that there was a big slap on the wrist of the Atlanta DA in terms of bias. What do you think about that in terms of, does this become the perfect kind of thing that Trump turns into? You see, it's obvious. It's a witch hunt. They're after me. And here we go again.
What bias are you referring to?
Well, I'm just pointing out that the judge today limited the district attorney. Did you see that story?
No, I haven't seen anything today.
There was the investigation into Trump and Trump's attempt to affect the votes.
I know the overall, what the target
right.
of
so
the
there was a judge, is, there was a decision. Ruling? There was a judge today decided that the DA could not investigate. I'm blanking on the guy's name who apparently she was raising funds.
Burt Jones is running for lieutenant governor.
And so the judge is now holding her accountable for a bias and not allowing her to move forward on that particular deposition.
Yeah. So let's be clear on what that is. I don't know when she did. I'm not sure of the date. What Dennis is talking about here is that we all know that she has gone full speed ahead on subpoenaing all those who were involved in the fake electors. And what was so onerous here in Georgia was that the fake electors, because there were elected officials involved, were able to hold their meeting in the state capitol. Remember, they had to try to slip in Michigan and so forth. But because there were state legislators involved, they held in secrecy the reason for reserving a committee room in the Capitol for the state of Georgia.
So this, Ray, these are the electors, the fake electors that Trump summoned up.
Correct.
To represent Georgia, to go to Washington and say, we are the electors and we are giving the electoral votes right. to Georgia. And now right. the DA in Fulton County, this great powerful woman is getting close to indicting Trump.
Right.
And you're saying that the fake electors actually used a room in the state capitol?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Whoa, and barred. And when some reporters found out about it, they were barred from the room. Okay. Now, several of these reporters have been interviewed by the grand jury, and many of the fake electors have. They have now gone from being just interviewed to being, they have received target letters, and you might have seen that. So now they are targets of investigation, which means they might be indicted. The controversy relates to Burt Jones, who is running for lieutenant governor. And the issue they are trying to bring up is the fact that Fani Willis held a fundraiser for Charlie Bailey, who is the Democratic candidate for lieutenant governor. So that's what the issue is. Now, it probably wasn't a good idea for her to do that. And so it raises that appearance of being politically motivated, but solely as it relates to subpoenaing and bringing in testimony from Burt Jones. But Burt Jones is not the target, and Burt Jones is not critical, in my view, from where I sit and have heard, Burt Jones is not critical to making the case for the overall conspiracy. Remember, this is a racketeering case. She is using the Georgia RICO statute. She has brought on a number of attorneys that are experts in RICO under the state statute for Georgia for this. So this is a sprawling investigation. It is much broader and much further along, quite frankly, than anything that the Justice Department is doing in DC. So right. I wouldn't, she probably got upbraided. I haven't seen it, but I think it's legitimate for the question to be raised. It's a good lesson for her that she's got to be beyond reproach and not have even an appearance of being unfair. Yes.
My concern, by the way, there's a version of it in Axios today if people want to understand the background. I have no doubt about what you just said, Ray, but people are not careful readers, and any opening, this is can be a problem. Trump is a master at turning a situation like this, fogging it up and using it. So I'm just saying it's of concern because clearly everybody's looking at Georgia because the attorney general is still a slow go, and where is he? So people are really watching this, and Trump is going to use any little thing to twist away from this. I'm just raising it.
And I hear you loud and clear. That's fair, but they were already saying that. They were already saying what Trump always does right. is a witch hunt.
We don't want to give them details.
Politically motivated, right. The Democrats, they've already said all of the above.
Yeah.
Right. The thing about her is she's staying true to her calling as a DA, and she's committed to following wherever this will lead. And she's so got forces behind us.
We have the district attorney of Fulton County, Georgia, who is pursuing a criminal prosecution for election tampering on the part of Donald Trump, plus the insane evocation of these fake electors. As Myra Reason has pointed out in the chat, if it's not one thing, it's going to be another. Right. Rosanna Dana used to say that on Saturday Night Live as well. So, you know, we got to stick with that. Ray, is there anything else you want to tell us? Thank you for that, Dennis. Wendy, and then and Ray will wrap up. Wendy Lederman, and then we're going to move on. I do want to welcome Howie Hawkins from the Green Party with us today, and he'll say a couple words too. But Wendy and then Ray again.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, and that was really, really important what you're just speaking to, and I hope it gets a lot more press. And now it kind of seems a little bit of a lesser statement, but just two really quick things. And thank you so much, Ray. We always really appreciate you. So the thing with Michelle Warnock, and I think it ties in with the establishing the tactical patterns. Like here in Florida, just I don't know if you're aware or not, but in Broward we have Sheila Sherfalis McCormick, and she's a progressive that took over Hastings' seat, and she just filed a lawsuit against the Democratic former mayor of Broward, Dale Holness, who because he tried to sue her when she lost the race against him to replace this bid, and now he's just slandering her, saying that she's misused COVID funds for her private medical center. And meanwhile, his daughter is in prison right now for fraudulently using COVID funds. And he's been fined himself for not disclosing finances. So it just establishes a pattern of the establishment, whether it's either blue or red. And so I just thought it was interesting to mention. And just one more quick point as far as your fundraising goes, because your work is just so important and impressive. Something that I did for when I was with Extinction Rebellion in Miami is we did like small local music shows, and it's really a lot easier to put on because local bands are not only connected and have a following, but they're willing to pay for free. And the only thing you really had to pay for or get donated was printed materials, but we had live artists, and we had raffles for the live art that was made. And that raised funds in itself, just selling the raffle tickets. But then on the higher end scale is to do art auctions. So then you get the bigger donors. And so I just wanted to put those ideas out to you. And if I can offer any like advice or anything, reach out to me anytime. Thank you so much, Ray.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. No, that's great.
Ray, do you want to jump in on that? We're going to move on.
Those are all great ideas. I'll take that into consideration and follow up.
It's always great to have you on, Ray. We really appreciate it. Thank you again. And folks, if there's any one organization that needs our support in this situation on a nonpartisan way, voter education, get out the vote. It's the Atlanta NAACP and the campaign there. I did want to mention, Ray, before you go, that Andrea Miller says she primarily campaigns in states with a certain percentage of African Americans. But I had a conversation with the campaign manager of Tim Ryan's campaign in Ohio. And if you take Cleveland, Columbus, Dayton, Toledo, Youngstown, and Cincinnati, that meets her goal. And I would hope that this grassroots campaigning can spread, especially to Ohio. The guy, the Republican candidate for governor, for Senate in Ohio is campaigning very hard right now. In Israel, I don't know what the heck he's doing there. So we do have a chance there. I want to mention that. Speaking of Ohio, I want to welcome our good friend David Saltman from Akron, a world-renowned TV producer. Always glad to have David on with us. Howie Hawkins, do you want to say a couple words? And then I'm going to give it to Mike Hirsch to bring in a couple folks from PDA. But Howie, you raised an issue of the Democrats attacking third parties. Do you want to mention that?
Yeah, I just put the article in the link. It was in Counterpunch last weekend, and it's called The Democrats' Third Party Massacres. And everybody here knows what the Republicans are doing with respect to suppressing voting rights and honest elections, but the Democrats do it too. Voter suppression, election rigging, by keeping the Green Party off the ballot. And party suppression is a form of voter suppression. In 2016, we know from exit polls that 61% of Jill Stein's voters, the Green Party candidate, and 55% of Gary Johnson's voters, the Libertarian Party candidate, would not have voted if they were not on the ballot. You add those numbers up, that's 3.5 million voters. So party suppression is a form of voter suppression. We see it in authoritarian governments around the world, and we're seeing it here in the United States from the Democrats. So this article is 5,000 words about, you know, how the Democrats do that to the Green Party. One thing they do is they make the petition requirements impossible. Here in New York, they basically more than tripled the vote standard to keep your ballot line, more than tripled the signature standard. So this year, after wiping all the third parties out, except those that cross endorse Trump or Biden, 45,000 signatures in 42 days. There were 8 attempts to get on a ballot and all of us failed. And that was just that was the intent of the law. And that was a law passed in 2020 by now disgraced Governor Cuomo and pushed also by the chair of the Democratic Party, Jay Jacobs. And the purpose was to keep us off the ballot. We got 5% of the vote in the previous election for governor. And that's what Cuomo objected about. So that's one thing they did.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Howie. Is there anything else you want to jump in with before we move on? We appreciate that.
Well, I urge people to read the article because, you know, this comes from the top of the Democratic Party. Let me make this last point. From Mark Elias, who was mentioned earlier. He's run the election law divisions of Perkins Coie, which is the Democrats' biggest law firm with branches all over the country. They have led the attack on the Green Party ballot access going back to Nader in 2004. And he now, in the current thing is, in North Carolina, the Greens got enough signatures, and the Democrats on the Board of Elections refused to certify them onto the ballot. They did that to us in Wisconsin in 2020. They intimidate petitioners. They send people who claim to be from the Green Party or the Board of Elections to people that sign petitions to try to get them to remove their signatures. They did that to us in Montana. They sent lawyers and private investigators to people's homes,
okay,
and telling them if they have anything wrong, if they're carrying a petition, they could be charged with a felony. It's intimidation. And so one more point, you know, there's a way to solve this. We could have a federal election standard for fair ballot access, but the last bill that was introduced for that was from John Conyers in 1989. We could have proportional representation in the House. So you could have a multi-party democracy, but there is a bill for that, but there's only 7 co-sponsors in the Senate. And then you do that, you get rid of the problem of gerrymandering, because you can't gerrymander districts that are multi-member and you have proportional representation. And we could do the same thing in the presidential election. Get rid of the Electoral College. You know, the last two Republicans first got elected by losing the popular vote, but getting installed by the Electoral College. It almost happened in 2020. We came close.
Okay.
There's no bill in the Congress to do that. So
all right,
the solutions to these problems, and I can just tell you, you know, the Greens are really upset because
okay. We
don't have full voting rights. We don't have election protection passed by the Congress.
Okay.
In the meantime, they try to keep us out of the ballot, off the ballot, so we can't even raise these issues.
Thank you, Howie. We appreciate your great activists and keep us informed with it and keep doing what you're doing. I do want to mention you raised one issue. This is killing me. I gotta do it. The Democratic Party has been taking donations from people supporting Democrats and using money to support far-right candidates that they think they can beat. This just happened in Pennsylvania in the governor's race. It's happening elsewhere. Where the geniuses in the Democratic Party, we're talking about millions of dollars, instead of taking this money and building a grassroots national organization, they're playing games and supporting far-right candidates that they think they can beat. It's outrageous. It should not be allowed to happen in any way, shape, or form. If people donate to the Democratic Party, that money should go to support building a grassroots organization, not the supporting far-right candidates that they think they can be. It's an outrageous game and really a very, very destructive. I want to acknowledge the great Lulu Freestat is with us. Lulu, good to see you. Keep up your great work, please. I want to give it now quickly to Mike Hirsch. Mike, you have a couple of folks from PEA that are going to make.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.